The Monopoly Collect-A-Win game is now at Bonds and Pavilions. Play for your chance to win $1 million cash, a vacation home, and instant prizes and offers. Find out more at Bonds and Pavilions. Use your club card to get Foster Farms Whole Fryer Grade A Chicken for only 89 cents a pound. Limit four packages. And Lucerne Chunk or Shredded Cheese, 6 to 8 ounce selected varieties, $1.69 each when you buy three mix or match. Bonds and Pavilions, it's just better. See game rules at playmonopoly.us. Monopoly is a trademark of Hasbro and is used with permission.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Science News You Can Use Radio with Amy Elkon and Dr. Jennifer Vertelin. I'm science-based advice columnist and author Amy Elkon, also known as the Advice Goddess.
And I'm animal behaviorist and author Dr. Jennifer Vertelin.
This is our every other week show on which we lay out science news you can use to solve your relationship problems or just improve your relationships and have a better life. On the weeks in between, tune in for my shows talking to authors of the best behavioral science books out there. And stay with us tonight as we discuss the sluts and swingers of the human and animal kingdom and lay out some science that can help you decide what sort of a relationship makes the most sense for you.
Okay, so not quite 2 weeks ago, Chris Brown made headlines again, or rather, a woman involved with him did. No, it wasn't Rihanna, but it was a woman named Tamron Pierce, who may or may not have had sex with him in Las Vegas. The interesting thing isn't whether or not they actually had sex, but the reaction of fans to Miss Pierce. Although she bragged about spending time with him on her Facebook page, she was criticized for allegedly sleeping with someone she had just met. And I say allegedly had sex because we can't be sure they had sex, but many people seem to assume it. Now, many of these people didn't even refer to Miss Pierce by her actual name, but merely by the acronym THOT, which for those of you who don't know what that means, is that hoe over there. But back to Chris Brown. Chris Brown, on the other hand, he didn't get hardly any flack for the very same behavior, which leads me to the topic of tonight's show, sluts and swingers of the human and animal kingdoms. Tonight, we will lay out for you what the science says about hooking up multiple partners, whether that multiple partner thing really works for people, and why it does when it does, and much, much more. So, Amy, let's kick things off with what we would formally call promiscuity. How do we define a promiscuous person?
Well, someone who's having a lot more sex than you are.
Okay, but is it more sex than you are or more sexual partners? Because, you know, in animals, we define promiscuous mating systems to be those where males and females, on average, mate with multiple partners, which is actually most species, including humans. Of course, we don't label squirrels as being bad for being promiscuous. They just simply are. But in humans, it almost always seems negative and applied almost exclusively to females. Why is there this double standard when it comes to sexual behavior, particularly promiscuity?
Well, actually, we do care more about what women are doing, and it's really a paternity problem. So, you know, back in the days of early humans, you couldn't just walk up to a tree and put your credit card in and order a DNA test. So, we still have this antique psychology we're running on. You know, we basically have this psychology that's a mismatch for our modern world, like the way, you know, we evolved to want sugar, to long for it because it would have been important when there wasn't a lot of food around. And now you can go to Costco and leave with, like, you know, a warehouse full of donuts. You know, in this case, the sexual double standard, this is one of those mismatches because our genes don't know from DNA tests, which we now have. And so the problem is we are one of those species, and you talk about this a lot in animals, in which women evolved to have much more of a cost from a single sex act. So, you know, pregnancy for 9 months, that sucks. And then a screaming kid to drag around and feed while you were collecting grubs and berries if you're one of our ancestors. Now, this is not a really great situation. You kind of want to make sure that, you know, there's going to be a guy there driving the, I guess, the pre-wheel station wagon, whatever they had. And this is called parental investment theory. This is basically, it's who does the most investing in a child. That person's the choosiest. We call it female choice, or anthropologists do. And that person also has the most social shame brought down on them for going, you know, going off behind the bush with a lot of different sexual partners. And so, you know, to explain that a little further, let's turn to me. When I'm asked at a party, do you have any children? I like to answer, none that I know of. I know. but the truth is, here's the thing. The nut of this is that women always, sorry about using that word nut, the women always know whether children are theirs, you know, assuming they got to experience the fun of, you know, getting pregnant instead of just, you know, falling into a coma and then waking up after a successful C-section 9 months later. You know, a man, on the other hand, men evolved to be suspicious vis-a-vis any signs that he'd maybe be going off and clubbing a bison over the head to feed children who will actually be passing on the genes of the guy in the cave next door. So, you know, this slut shaming, as we call it now, comes out of that, you know, because men and women are different, and they also have different interests as far as why they're doing it. So for men, it's about making women think twice about running around with the guy in the lean-to or the cave next door. It's about imposing a cost on women so they'll think twice about doing that.
Well, yeah, actually, that's in a very real sense, that's correct. And it's also true that females often invest more in raising offspring. But, you know, some anthropologists like Sarah Hardy argued that humans are actually cooperative breeders, that we've evolved from cooperative breeding, where, you know, the old it takes a village to raise a child attitude, which may explain why in some societies it's perfectly normal for men and women to have multiple sexual partners at the same time. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but first I want to address something you said about the different motivations for men and women to slut shame other women. You know, men do it, as you say, out of sexual jealousy, but women get ostracized by other women as well. Why? Well, first, there's also sexual jealousy, either because said slut slept with a woman's husband, but also women do it out of competition. So the logic goes, by marring another woman's reputation, a female can reduce this competition's value in a man's eyes. And as a result, the woman who's doing the shaming can take out the competition.
Yeah, and that's what's called derogation of competitors. I love these terms. They're so anthro.
Yes.
But I do want to say, I don't think it's sexual jealousy in men. I think it's sexual fear. It's protecting, you know, oh my God, you know, we can't have these sluts running around, none of us will know who our kids are. And so, but getting back to your question, you know, this derogation of competitors, I just had Joyce Benenson, who studies sex differences, on my other show. And what I was really struck by was how horribly nasty women are to each other. Not us, we're not like that. But because women are the primary caregivers, you know, and again, it's really hard to be pregnant for 9 months and have a mouth to feed, you're hampered by this. There's this intense competition for male investment. And so even if you're a woman who is not pregnant, you know, who's never going to have kids, this is your genes are telling you to be this way. And so, and what better way to compete than to convince men that another woman is a bad investment? And so gossip, you know, this is the internet of old, the social media of old. So they spread the word amongst the girls, and it gets to the tribe. And then also Benenson and another researcher, Ann Campbell, they have shown that social exclusion is this horrible punishment girls and women inflict. They cast out women who just don't toe the line, women who stand out in some way, especially women who are too sexually uppity, you know, and it's really, there's a proactive effect, you know, to this, because knowing that being female and less and demure is a way you're going to get socially excluded, you know, well, I wrote this article about this, and I said, remember junior high school? Well, if you're a woman, you never really get to leave. So,
oh my gosh, that's so true.
And it really is. And so, well, I have a question for you, which is that do animals, or maybe birds, somehow it strikes me, maybe birds would do this more, do this derogation of competitors thing. You know, are there birds out there going, caw, caw, winging over there is a tramp?
Okay, first of all, I love your impression of a bird.
I suck. This is why I'm not an actor.
No. Cool. It's great. It was great. But, you know, actually, in all seriousness, no, they don't. In fact, no one, male or female, is wasting any of their precious time on such foolishness as shaming other individuals for their sexual behavior, especially since they're all too busy getting busy. I mean, you know, really, males definitely don't want females to mate with other males. For the very reason that you said, they are, if they're providing any kind of resource, they only want to provide it to their own offspring. And they have a variety of strategies at their disposal to prevent females from mating with other males. And it almost always involves trying to control females, which is something we see very clearly in human societies as well. And sometimes, you know, males definitely find already mated females less attractive. So there's this really cute little rodent called a lemming, a brown lemming, and they're just like these little tiny little pudgy rodents that live in the tundra. And the males can literally smell the calling card left by another male that has had,
gross,
you know, his way with a female lemming. And they move on to try to find a female that hasn't already mated with a male. You know, but not all males care, okay? 13-line ground squirrel males just line up in a queue and wait their turn to mate with a female. They just scramble to see who can get there first.
Squirrels have gangbangs. Who knew?
They do. And nobody wants sloppy seconds.
Oh, or sloppy 12ths, certainly. I mean, God, that's horrible. Okay, I'm going to turn to a little practical advice for all of you hot-blooded ladies out there, and this is about casual sex. So first of all, you know, you need to figure out if you actually have the emotional makeup to have it. This is a big deal because there's this tendency that comes out of feminism to confuse equal with the same. So, you know, remember there are sex differences, biological, psychological, they're very hardwired. You know, it's not like, you know, your genes figured out that there was Gloria Steinem happening and they went like, okay, no, forget it. So most men are very capable of having sex and walking away without needing to get a text the next morning telling them they're pretty. But actually, I mean, many women, and this is per research by John Marshall Townsend, who's an anthropologist, many women feel that they have these longings for more after what's supposed to be casual sex. And this is not when they went in thinking like, oh, he's so cute. It was when they went in knowing the guy was nobody they would want to be involved with, even in those cases. And so we don't know for sure, but this may have something to do with oxytocin release from sex. But, you know, as I know, the research on oxytocins and prairie voles is much better than on humans. And it's bad to just extrapolate everything from animals to humans. But, okay, I'm getting a little off track. So forget the hysterics over all the college students hooking up. This is my message to everyone. Because this is when we're talking about casual sex, you know, for any of you who are listening who are millennials, you know, parents, it's so funny. They think that they've sent the millennial generation to college, aka a 4-year orgy. But the reality is, per my pal Jean Twenge's recent research, is that millennials are having sex with fewer partners than their parents did. So baby boomers had about 11 partners during adulthood. You know, people are there living like 11. I had like 90. But baby boomers 11, but you shouldn't tell. We'll get to that. Gen X had 10. So millennials can expect an average of 8. Now, this is a prediction. So maybe you'll have like 88 if you're a millennial and you're lucky or get lucky a lot or whatever. But so the researchers, Twenge and her co-author, they can only guess why right now. But she thinks it's because they're doing less serious dating. There's all this hooking up. But about all this hooking up with friends thing, if you're a millennial, I suggest that you ignore the people who are getting all hysterical about it. There is a point at which a relationship is not what you want. And when you want one, you'll stop hooking up and go look for one. But okay, back to female competition. Dr. Jen, talk about when that really comes into play with animals, because that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, so in 13-line ground squirrels, as I mentioned, the females could care less what other females are doing. Female competition only really comes into play if the male is providing resources or parental care. Sperm doesn't qualify. Okay. And if we think about these little 13-line ground squirrels, they're over in their territory. They don't really give a hoot about what another female is doing in her territory. But that's not to say that when a male is providing resources or parental care, that females don't fiercely compete over males and go after each other. Tree swallows are basically ruthless about this. One female will have a knockdown, drag-out fight with another. She'll even drag a female out of her nest and beat her up to get rid of her to take over and take her male that comes with the nest. What we have no idea about is if the beaten and battered loser female yells slut as she flies off, you know, to lick her wounds and find another mate. But I doubt it, since most females are all trying to do the same thing, which is either steal someone's mate or have a little variety.
Wow. I mean, the animal kingdom, they call it wild kingdom for a reason. It's pretty amazing. We think, you know, humans, we're getting it on. We have dungeons. Oh, my God. I'm worried about the sex lives of all these animals now. It's just,
it's pretty dramatic. Yeah, there's lots of drama. It's like a soap opera. Tree swallow life is like a soap opera.
They need therapy, I guess, but, you know, it's where do you get it? But anyway, okay, this seems a good time to lay out the benefit to mating with multiple males, which if you're in a relationship, is called by anthropologists, I love it, EPCs, extra pair copulations. I mean, does that get less sexier? So, Jennifer, you take this one.
I know. Why not call it taking a lover or having a side piece? Really? Extra pair copulation? Okay. Well, you know, so formal. But here are some of the top reasons females seek additional males. And make no mistake, it is the females seeking additional males. One very reason is to trade up and get extra resources or get better genes. So mating with a high-ranking or high-quality male is kind of an evolutionary no-brainer. And it's largely one of the reasons why females mate with multiple males. So, for example, say you're a strawberry poison dart frog, which is one of my favorite frogs, and you're looking for a mate. You know, you're tiny. You don't get out a lot. And so you mate with the first male that comes by, right? But then another male comes by, and maybe he's a little shinier and prettier than the previous one. Well, because females, we invest more in our offspring, because face it, eggs are expensive and come in a limited supply, why put all your eggs in one basket or in one male? So females trade up all the time. On the other hand, if perhaps you're a swan settling in for a long-term relationship, it still benefits females to have an extra partner. You find a solid male with good resources who will be a great parent, and then you get a little side action on the side to secure some great genes and have more babies. I mean, there's pretty good evidence that the more males a female mates with, the higher number of offspring she has. And lastly, an additional male can just provide extra resources and protection. Sometimes it benefits the females to sleep with a bunch of males so no one knows quite who the father is. Since they could all be the father, they're less likely to hurt an infant. And this is what we suspect is going on in chimpanzees who have secret rendezvous with many males in the community behind the alpha male's back.
And we will get to that on this, you know, is the infant, is the child endangered, you know, with a step parent there? Because there's research by Martin Daly and Margot Wilson. But what you're talking about, at least it has a better name in, you know, from anthropologists. It's called the sexy son hypothesis in humans. I like that. It's not as quite as fun as the, what's it called? The sneaky fucker theory by John Maynard Smith. The Brits, isn't that great? The Brits, they do that. They use those naughty words. You know, I like this.
I think they're so repressed, but then they come out with sneaky fucker.
Yeah, but you have to say that like a dowager aunt, which I can't quite do. But okay, the sexy fun hypothesis is very much like what you were talking about, that women who have landed the not so physically attractive, but the stable, good provider of a husband, they then go fool around with the hot bartender type. So they get the guy's genes, a really good, sexy, he's like tall, he's got that chin with a little like thing in it. The collapse is a genetic thing. But then with his genes, they have his genes in their kid, but they have the support system in place. So there is an evolutionary reason for this. The women will have more grandchildren. That's the theory, because more women will want to jump the bones of the hot son they've produced. But very important to remember, all this rutting around comes with costs. And here with the Dr. Bill, here with the bill is Dr. Jen. God, my brain.
I'll send a bill, right? Here's the price of promiscuity, and even animals pay this price, the risk of STDs. That's right. You heard it here first.
No
animals
way.
Animals get sexually transmitted diseases. Oh, yeah.
Gross.
Oh, yeah. And you will never look at ladybugs the same after tonight because they get crabs, you know.
Wait a second. Wait. I just talked to you. They get, how big are these crabs? Jeez.
Well, clearly
horrifying.
They're tiny, okay?
Yuck. And where do they get them? Do they, like, get Brazilian waxes so they don't, you know, never mind.
but just as an aside, not to go completely off topic, the recent trend in landscaping in humans has virtually eliminated human pubic lice. But back to ladybugs and the crabs they get. So unlike our version, their version of crabs can actually kill the males or females and lead to infertility. And if you are an entechinus, which is a very strange little marsupial, not just in its name, but just all around strange marsupial from Australia, then you pay the ultimate price. Though in this case, it's just the males that pay this price. Both males and females run around for 2 weeks in this mad mating sex-crazed season, but the males go all out and they have so much sex with so many females that they don't even bother to eat. They don't groom themselves. Their immune system crashes and all the males die every single year.
No way.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. It's like, fuck off and die. It takes it to the extreme. And I didn't want to just jump in there, but actually a mad mating season, as we call it in humankind, Burning Man. So anyway, on to the human men. God, ooh, I'm still grossed out. I'm going to have bad dreams about ladybug crabs tonight. That's just so sad. So for human men, the problem is one of access. So if you're gay and if you're gay and hot, you can go to a bar and go back in a bar stall and someone will have sex with you and then they will leave and you'll leave. And, you know, but this does not work for straight men. And there's a reason they don't do this. And it isn't because they think it's terrible and dirty. It's because women are the gatekeepers of sexuality. Remember, female choice. And they want you to buy them a drink and take them out for dinner and tell them they're pretty first like 600 times. I mean, and there are women, okay, so there are different conditions. There's like the casual sex condition. I'm talking like researcher language, but, and then there are women who want a relationship. But, you know, even if women don't need all that, even if they don't look, well, they don't look for all that. Even if you're just some guy in their dorm they're hooking up with, you know, the phrase, I don't usually do this. I say, I'm doing better than I did with the birds.
I don't know how many times I've actually said that.
Right. No, this is a thing. Okay, guys, we all say this and we don't mean it. And you know what? We just like did the thing with the guy in the dungeon the week before. Okay. So I don't usually do this. You do not hear this from men. You know, sometimes they'll say that like about contacting you on the internet, or they used to, like before everybody was like swiping their way to like sex 20 minutes later on Tinder. But, you know, this again goes back to female choice, to women being the choosier sex. So even if a woman isn't all that choosy, she's going to need to seem choosy so she won't be deemed a slut. So, and this is my advice for women, especially, you know, have all the partners you want, but keep it quiet. Find ways that nobody's going to find out. And in this, very, very important, never, ever, ever tell when a guy asks you how many partners you've had. So just refuse. So you won't get into the subject. So you don't talk about that. Even if he swears that he won't think badly of you. Because guess what? It is not going to help him to know, except maybe to help him decide to get rid of you and maybe chase you around the house and yell at you for being a slut. So, because to man, a woman who will have sex easily is a woman who's a security risk.
I couldn't agree more, actually. And even female animals are discreet and keep their slutty ways on the down low. That's why it took scientists.
That.
They did.
Really?
That's why it took scientists. Oh, yeah. That's why it took scientists to develop a DNA testing to figure out that females were getting their groove on all over the place. Right.
Wow.
Yeah, that's because cool. It's risky for females because of that whole male control thing and why males don't want females mating with other males. But, you know, let's go back to reputation for a minute, because unlike in animals where we don't see this cost, I think the social cost is really high for human females, even in cultures where it's perfectly acceptable and even expected for females to have multiple husbands or sexual partners. The Kulina Indian tribe of Brazil and Peru is a prime example of this. They are hunter-gatherers, and there's a pretty high adult male mortality rate. And this is bad news for kids if their father dies. So the Kulina have solved this problem as a result of this high adult male mortality, where there's ritual sex by females with additional men, so women line up additional resources, mostly meat and protection, for their kids. Now, these extra fathers are socially recognized, but once again, everyone is expected to be discreet. And if a woman has too many extra fathers, she is considered too promiscuous, and males are discouraged from helping her. So now, I don't know what this number is. Like, is it two? Is it three? I have no idea. But even here, it seems that there is a limit to how many partners other men will tolerate. And once again, it's the woman's reputation that becomes tarnished.
Well, I just want to ask you, so you say it's ritual sex. Do they like all line up at her lean-to? And then, or do you know how that works?
Yeah. So the way that it works is there's a big hunt, right? And ahead of the hunt, a woman picks out the male that she's going to choose to be her extra father. And so the men go out and they hunt all the meat, and then they throw the meat into a big old pile. And the woman and the man that she chose eat meat and go have sex.
Wow. Oh, okay. So now what I want to say,
so
first
many
about,
puns are there. I know.
I just was like, I just thought like, oh, it's just too easy. I'll just move on. And so, you know, about whether women get sexual freedom in a society, Justin Garcia, who's an evolutionary psychologist who's at Kinsey, he explained something very interesting, which is that a key factor in these societies where the women have, you know, a bunch of sexual partners is that they're matrilocal, which means that women live with their biological families. They, you know, live with their parents and their cousins and things. And so they get this degree of support from them, you know, like if their spouse is mean or, you know, they have a support structure. So they, you know, they can fall back on that if the marriage goes kaput. So, and then the other kind of societies are patrilocal societies. And that's where women go live with the men. They stay with their families. And those are places where female sexuality is more restrained. So, you know, women don't have that support system. But even in these matrilocal societies, Justin says that men will sometimes beat or even abandon the women, you know, if they are too, like you said, too, you know, slutty, mm-hmm. you know, and it really yeah. comes back to this, who's screaming breakfast at? Am I bringing back food from the hunt for some other guy's kid? You know, and so, and I just want to use this to lead into jealousy, because what we don't really understand is that jealousy has a function. It's called, they say it's adaptive. You know, an evolved mate guarding strategy. And it's this, you know, when you get that feeling, it's telling you, hey, something's up. Now, maybe it's valid, maybe it's not, but look how flirty she's being with him. You know, and there's a very interesting sex difference in this that aligns with parental investment. Who invests the most in the kids? You know, who brings in the food? You know, whose genes are being passed on? David Buss talks about men feeling more concerned about a woman's physical, you know, the physical infidelity, like the actual sex act. And a woman feels more concerned about a man being emotionally invested in a woman that he cheats with, because the woman's having sex with a man, that's of concern because she could end up having the other guy's kid, and the guy could end up bringing home, you know, the bison or whatever to pass on the other guy's genes, you know. And for the woman, an emotional investment, that leads the man to, you know, funnel his resources toward that other woman.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure that I agree with Buss's take on the difference in how the jealousy is, like for males, it being strictly about the physical act, and for females, it being strictly about any kind of emotional attachment. But I do agree that jealousy is adaptive. It has a function, and it is a mate guarding strategy. But, you know, not everyone feels jealous. And not every individual wants or needs monogamy. And with some people, having a happy, healthy, sexually open relationship works. So how can someone decide if that's what's right for them?
Well, you know, it helps if you start out thinking, as you could say, it's raining, it's pouring, monogamy is boring. I did that almost as boringly as I did caw-caw, but what can I say? They need to figure out whether they want it, whether they can have it. And going back to Justin, Justin Garcia from Kinsey, he did research, very interesting research on this gene for sensation seeking. This is the DRD4 dopamine receptor gene. And this makes people more likely, if they have this, to have engaged in some kind of promiscuous sexual encounters and infidelity, which isn't saying it controls your morals. But let me explain sensation seeking. This is, it basically is having your need for stimulation just set on high. So high sensation seeking is a personality trait, strong biological basis, and you have a lust for novelty, so new situations, variety, lots of partners, and intense experiences. And then you're willing to engage in risky behavior to get them compared to what other people would do. So this means that, you're going to have a hard time swapping the power of now for the power of no, as I once wrote in a column. And if you're likely to have this kind of sexuality where you need this sort of I love a parade thing going on, you have to tell your partner about that. This is not the thing that you get to, I'll keep it a good secret, and you marry them and then, they catch you pounding your coworker in the back of the minivan. So, this is, but what people say is, they tend to think that love is protective, like, oh my God, how can you cheat if you love your partner? Well, guess what? Libido and love are different forces.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that you're right. You have to be able to be honest with your partner. But in order to do that, we have to change the conversation or being willing to have those conversations. I mean, people need to stop lying about their sexual wants, needs, and desires for many reasons, not the least of which is how monogamous they really are willing to be.
Yeah. And so that's why it's great that there are all these, people like, I'm poly, coming out, because it tells people, look, this is out there, and it's something to consider. And, but I do think that it's important to remember that jealousy is an adaptive mate guarding strategy. We can try to control this intellectually, but some people just aren't going to be able to handle it emotionally, that their partner's off doing the neighbor, and so the way this works out, you need to make agreements ahead of time for how this non-monogamy thing is going to work. And maybe even have a clause, like if you're going to do it for X number of months to start, see how it goes. So some people only allow sex when you're out of town, like on a business trip. This is a very gay guy thing. Others say, okay, just have one single other partner. Some people like that. And some people become a big, happy communal family with their, and like, there's my other sex partner. Ooh. Okay. Sorry. Judgment. Bad Amy. Okay. I try not to judge. Oh, I do judge, but I try not to explain it on the radio. And a great way to explore all these options and repercussions, one of the best is to look at this great book, The Ethical Slut. It's by Dossie Easton and the other author, she changed her name because she wrote it when her kids were young. So look for Dossie Easton, The Ethical Slut. It lays out all these things. It basically tells you how you can figure out whether or not this is for you and your partner.
Yeah, and once you make these agreements, I think you have an obligation to stick to them, or an opportunity to revisit your agreements and make adjustments if necessary. And this can only happen if we stop trying to make everyone be one way. And given genetic, cultural, and environmental variation, I think it's fair to ask if it's even reasonable that we expect every single individual human to fit the mold of monogamy. I mean, not even swans do this, and they're heralded as the most monogamous, and, they're not. Yeah, no, we should really give black vultures the Valentine's Day card place, because swans, they're just not, they're not cutting it. I mean, but you know what, this isn't the same thing as claiming we're not a monogamous species. I mean, some animals, like I just mentioned, the black vultures are completely monogamous. And for others, like the swans, there's variation in the population. So it's much more interesting to ask, why is there so much variation in the degree of fidelity? And we can see in current human cultures and historic ones that polyamory is not new. It comes in every form imaginable, and it makes sense under certain conditions and for certain people. Like the Kulina, females having multiple males as part of life for golden lion tamarins because of the greater success of their offspring. These extra males help raise the kids, and this basically frees up the female to go gather her fruits and berries and have even more kids.
Well, there can be some problems, and they're very financially resource related. And so there was a study done in 2012. These guys all do cultural evolution work. It's the study, I think the first author was Joe Henrich. It was Robert Boyd and Pete Richardson. And this is on polygamous cultures. And what they found was that when there are these pools of unmarried men around, because there are men who take multiple wives. And so you think about, do the math, like this guy has three, that guy has none. He has like negative one, you know. And so, wait, is that right, math? Well, I'm not going to worry about that. So, but what happens is they find that in these societies, polygamous cultures, they have greater levels of crime, of violence, of poverty, and actually of gender inequality than in societies that institutionalize and practice monogamous marriage. And I know these guys, they aren't, this isn't like, they aren't, you know, crusaders for monogamous marriage, but this is just what they're finding in these societies that have these polygamous cultures. And then there's also another question about violence, you know, that Martin Daly and Margot Wilson, they did research on violence, you know, that when a child doesn't belong to the, like, the it's really on stepdads. And this is not to say men are bad and evil or horrible or anything, but this is just what the research shows, that unrelated men are the most likely to do harm to a woman's children, you know, the stepchildren. And again, not to say men are bad people. This is just like more likely to happen when children have stepdads. And I'm guessing you'll tell me it happens in the animal kingdom too.
Yeah, and it happens when you have stepmoms too. But it is true, say, in lions and many, but not
Disney,
all primates.
I was going to say the Disney stereotype is true. I like that.
Yeah, it is. You know, and it's true in lions and many, but not all primate species. But it's not universal. As in the case of the golden lion tamarins that I just mentioned, unrelated males help. And in baboons, unrelated males care for offspring. And in cooperative breeders like meerkats and hyenas, non-parents also raise the offspring. So, and even in some seasonally monogamous birds, a dunnock is one example, another male may take over and finish raising the kids of the previous male. And in many of these human cultures, the community is acting like cooperative breeders that don't require DNA to determine paternity. It's a very narrow Western view, to put it bluntly, and that the offspring is DNA focused. And instead, for many cultures, the community's goal is the success of all children. And they have a strategy that they've developed to deal with sexual jealousy, and that also works to ensure the greatest success for kids. It's not for everybody, but for some, it can work.
Well, I am partial to Western society, and so especially refrigerators.
Me
cars,
too.
A computer, me too. All of it, iPhones. But I think the essential thing to remember in all of this is that to understand that evolution doesn't care if you're happy. It just wants you to spread your genes and by pulling down your genes. Sorry, that was such a bad joke. It just came out. But you know what this means? So being in love doesn't mean you won't be attracted to anybody but your partner. Again, people confuse love and libido. And so basically, men and women need to not just assume that they should do this traditional monogamous model, or that it even works, or that they're capable of doing it. Or on the other hand, you know, people think like, oh yeah, we're going to have, you know, they have these threesomes and everything like that. These more creative models, you know, they're just the three of us or just the, you know, more of us. I mean, you need to look at who you are and what you need and be open about your needs and maybe have a trial period and then try to shape a sex life and a relationship that works for both people or all 22 people. So no, that's almost the end of our show. Almost, but not quite. This is Amy Alcon, and you've been listening to Science News You Can Use Radio with Amy Alcon and Dr. Jennifer Vertelin.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Vertelin. Join the two of us again in 2 weeks and join Amy Alcon next week for her regular show featuring the top behavioral scientists explaining how their work can improve your life.
And please support our work by buying our new books, Amy Alcon's Good Manners for Nice People Who Sometimes Say Fuck, and Dr. Jennifer Vertelin's Wild Connection, What Animal Courtship and Mating Tell Us About Human Relationships. Dr. Jen, I know you have some final words from the animal kingdom.
I do. You know what the hussies and harlots of the animal kingdom reveal is that whether you're a good time seeking 13-lined ground squirrel or a faithful black vulture is not as important as being honest about what you are and remembering that flaunting your sexual tryst is never a winning strategy.